Okay, I'd like to thank the organizers of the invitation and also for dictating my title, which was I'd like to change, but since I was told what to talk about. Actually, I should say, just by way of personal reminiscence, that in some ways my mathematical career began with trying to understand the work of Herzebruch and Zagier on these generating functions. And at that time, their paper hadn't yet appeared, but there was a talk at a conference in Mannheim given by Herzebruch on the subject, with a lot of statements and very little in the way of sketches of proofs, which I found in some place and got fascinated by. So I tried to prove the things that he stated in this article, and since I didn't understand toroidal compactifications, I did the quaternionic case, and since I had no idea what they were doing, I found completely different proofs of the statements that they'd made there, except the analogs in the quaternionic case. This is when I was a graduate student. And what happened was I sent them a little manuscript that I wrote up on my typewriter, handwriting all the symbols back before the days of tech or computers, to Herzebruch and Zagier, who got very upset and decided that maybe I was trying to scoop them on their big project. So I got invited to Bonn, which was a nice consequence of this, and went on from there. So anyway, this talk is going to be still about, in some sense, the same subject, namely the generating function that Jace was generalizing to a more general relative quadratic extension. Here I'm going to be talking about more of an arithmetic version of it, and that is that, and this, as I said, is a report not on my work, but on work of Howard and Yang, but I think it's a very interesting business, and it's sort of fun to talk about somebody else's work. So the talk is going to be a survey of, I originally said survey because I had some grandiose idea that I would have the analog of 4 hours, but I only have one or less. Anyway, it's a survey about relations between height pairings of special cycles on Hilbert modular varieties and the Fourier coefficients of modular forms. You can view what Jace talked about, for example, as being the relation between height pairings on, not height pairings, but just intersection numbers on Hilbert modular varieties and usual cohomology and the Fourier coefficients of modular forms. So there's this is some jacked up analog of that for height pairings. And of course, it's motivated by the Gross-Zagier formula, which gives such relations. And so, as stated in the first slide, I will talk mostly about a recent preprint of Howard and Yang on intersections of Herzebruch-Zagier devices and CM cycles. Of course, they mean arithmetic intersections, as I'm about to discuss. And so what they're doing is they're looking at a height pairing. Now, the surfaces, these will be Hilbert modular surfaces that we've talked about a lot. If you smear them out arithmetically to schemes over Z and these integral models, which were also discussed, they become three-dimensional. The absolute dimension is now 3. And so if you want to make a pairing on such an object, you want to look at pairs of cycles whose codimensions add up to 3. And so if I have divisors and zero cycles on the generic fiber, then the codimensions are 1 and 2 respectively. They add up to 3. And so you would expect or hope to have some kind of a height pairing between Herzebruch-Zagier divisors, for example, or any divisors, and points, or in particular, in this talk, quartic CM points. So this is what I'm going to be talking about. First, let me review this moduli space M. I'll sort of do it in one go here, because I really do want to do it as a moduli space and not really think so much about the group theoretic aspect. So I fix a real quadratic field with this different Galois automorphism and so on. And now M will be the moduli stack over spec Z of principally polarized R M abelian surfaces. So what that means is over an arbitrary base S, maybe locally Noetherian connected, something like this, who cares, I'm going to consider triples, which consist of an abelian scheme over the base, an action of the ring of integers in the quadratic field on that abelian scheme, and a principal polarization of that abelian scheme. And they have to satisfy the following conditions. Well, of course, this principal polarization gives rise to a Rosati involution on the endomorphism algebra, and I require that the elements of OF, their image here, be fixed under that Rosati involution. And secondly, when these elements act on the Lie algebra of this scheme, which of course is some sort of a locally free coherent sheaf over the base S, if you like, the action on the Lie algebra is going to a priori be, the characteristic polynomial will be a priori some kind of a polynomial with coefficients in that sheaf, and I want it to actually just be the image of this polynomial, namely OS should be, well, this polynomial has characteristic, this is a characteristic polynomial of an element of OF, so it has integer coefficients, and I can view that as a polynomial here. So that's the requirement. This is so-called Kottwitz condition, which we make to make nice stacks out of moduli problems. And I'm not going to worry very much about the details about the bad reduction primes dividing the discriminant, et cetera, here. And that's not the point. Besides, it's not my problem. It's the problem of Howard and Yang, since I'm not talking about my own work, which is nice. Okay. So going on now, well, so this is, as said, this is a flat scheme over spec Z, which is smooth if we invert the primes dividing the discriminant, and it gives an integral model of the Hilbert modular variety. And the fundamental problem is to try to investigate the arithmetic Chow groups of this variety. Now, one should make sure it's regular, for example. Of course, one of the problems is I want arithmetic Chow groups in the sense of Gillet-Soule. This is the analog of homology groups, except they're very large, because Gillet and Soule include C-infinity functions, et cetera, et cetera. These are very large groups for various reasons. In any case, what one would really like to do is to, first of all, make sure it's a stack, so we've taken care of elliptic points, et cetera. That's not the issue. One wants to compactify by a toroidal method, which is known, it's known how to do that. And at the same time, one would like to allow some sort of singularities. Now, for example, in Chow hat 1 is basically metrized line bundles. So pick is the line bundles. Pick hat is metrized line bundles on really now this scheme. The metric is just goes on the generic fiber or the complex points. So pick hat would be Chow hat 1. And what's true is if I compactify the natural metrics that occur on all kinds of bundles, like the Hodge bundle, et cetera, just like for the modular curve, becomes singular at the boundary. The metrics are singular metrics. This is Q inverse BQ, right? And so the point is that there are singularities at the boundary, and so you don't want to work with the usual Chow groups of this compactified guy, but Chow groups or arithmetic Chow groups, which, for example, for pick hat, would allow you to have singular metrics, singularly metrized line bundles, and so on. So such a theory was developed for exactly this purpose by Burgos, Kuhn, and Kramer. And so what we really would like to do is have this compactified BBK Chow groups. But this won't play any role in this talk because we're going to be working on the height pairing between points and divisors, and all of the action will take place on the open original guy. And so as long as we're not fastidious about the difference between this fantasy group and this actual group, it doesn't matter. Besides, as I said, it's not my problem. It's the problem of the people who wrote this paper. So they're very careful, which I'm not going to be in this talk. So Howard and Yang are very careful. They don't make any claims about such a group or such a group. They do calculations about things that should be parts of height pairings on such groups. But I'm going to be looser here, again, because I have less constraints. I'm not publishing this. And so I'm going to make conjectures and statements as if these things were happening as stated here, and really try to illustrate what the hope is, what the hopes are in this picture. So the first thing we want to do is define special cycles. Well, of course, we've already seen how to define the Hertzsprung-Sage cycles on the generic fiber of this scheme, because the generic fiber is just this Hilbert modular surface that we've talked about a bunch. But now I have this moduli scheme, and so I'd like to define in some natural way the analog of Hertzsprung-Sage cycles on this moduli scheme. Now, you could do this by simply closing up. You have some curves on the generic fiber. You could just take their closures in the whole scheme, and you get some, take their flat closure or something, and you get some definition. But that's not such a great definition in the sense that I would like, the whole thing is a moduli space, and I would like these cycles that I get to be defined by some moduli problem. And so that's the purpose of this next part, which was some work that Rappaport and I did quite a long time ago. So we define what we call a special endomorphism. So now A is one of these RM abelian surfaces, could be over any base, we don't care. And a special endomorphism is an endomorphism of A. It's self-adjoint with respect to the Rosati involution. In other words, its star is itself. But it has the property that it Galois commutes. Remember, sigma is the Galois automorphism of the real quadratic field. It Galois commutes with the given specified endomorphisms OF. So sort of anti-commutes with them in this Galois sense. So when you push one of these given endomorphisms past J, you get the Galois action inside. Okay? So this is called a special endomorphism. And this is true for all F, all A and OF. And so, of course, if I add to such things, I get another such thing, and so they form a Z module. I could, if I like, tensor that Z module with Q and get a vector space. And over connected base, which is, I should have been saying all along, let's say the base S is connected here, there's a quadratic form on this space, it turns out, because if you square such an endomorphism, now it has the property that it actually commutes with the given Galois automorphisms, because it's square, you push past twice, and you just it just commutes with the given endomorphisms, and it has this star property, and so this means that the square is actually a scalar multiple of the identity. That turns out to be the case. That's a strong condition. So in this case, that defines a z-valued quadratic form on this lattice of special endomorphisms. Now, of course, this lattice could be zero, so that's okay. It's very easy to define z-valued quadratic forms on the zero space, but in general, it's not. And so what happens is that in general, this you get a quadratic lattice attached to any one of these objects. You get this quadratic lattice, which has of special endomorphisms. It has rank at most 4, and the quadratic form is positive definite. So, for example, if you happen to be in the case which allows special endomorphisms, and I'll discuss this later, you might get a two-dimensional quadratic positive definite quadratic space out of this. Okay, so on this moduli space, for every object we have this space, say over connected base, blah, 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 this space of the lattice of special endomorphisms. Okay, so now to define special cycles, what we do is we consider the following moduli problem. For an integer m, which is positive, we let Tm be the stack over spec C, where an object of Tm is now, you can just read it here, it's a pair, an A as before, that's one of these guys, and a J, which is a special endomorphism of A, with the property that the quadratic form has value M on it. It's a vector of length M in this lattice. So this, I view this whole construction as kind of a generalization in the arithmetic context of the theory of theta functions. But now what's true is we have some moduli space, and the quadratic space is varying over the moduli space. So we don't have one quadratic space, but we have many quadratic spaces and integral ones, et cetera. But nonetheless, the whole thing has some vague flavor of the theory of theta functions, and many analogs are true of classical things about theta functions. So that's what the goal in, from some point of view is here. In any case, this Tm, which is now the moduli stack of pairs like this, an A of the previous type together with a special endomorphism, we have a forgetful morphism where we just forget the special endomorphism and get a map to the moduli space itself. And what's true is that this definition gives rise to the Hertzeburg-Zaguier cycles on the generic fiber. So you get the mth Hertzeburg-Zaguier cycles as precisely the locus over Q, or over C if you prefer, of pairs like this, which would be a quadruple if you wanted to decode the whole thing. So you get a special endomorphism. So Tm is exactly where these abelian surfaces have an additional special endomorphism. Okay. Now, what's true is, so that gives us a supply of cycles defined in this modular way on this moduli space. And so in order to define elements of these arithmetic Chow groups, where I'm using the correct one here, what you need to do is, these are going to be divisors, of course, these things, and that's what you can show. These things are divisors. And you, in order to define elements of this arithmetic Chow group, you have to add a Green's function to them. So the cycle classes here have to be thickened up by some Archimedean data. This is like the metric. If this were pick, this would be like pick hat. So I'm taking a line bundle on the whole scheme, and on the complex points, I would be adding a metric. Well, here what I have is a cycle on the whole scheme, and at infinity, I'm putting a Green's function. And of course, that's equivalent by some standard constructions to putting a metric on the line bundle corresponding to this divisor. In any case, we would like to put such a Green's function, and you see down here in the footnotes, if anybody could read them, that I'm claiming this has not yet been done. Well, what's true is that there are actually two competing ways of doing this, not competing, but just two ways that people saw of doing it. One is an analog of what I'd done for the Shimura curve case, which you can do for any ON2 type variety, and that can be done here as well. This is an O22 Shimura variety secretly, and you can make that Green's function. Another one was made by Brunier, Burgos, and Kuhn in a paper, so BKK, on the Hilbert modular case, It's a different type of a Green's function. Now, the one constructed by BKK actually gives you a class in this group. It has good growth at infinity. It's singular at infinity, but has good enough growth. The one that I constructed doesn't have good enough growth, so it doesn't actually define a class here. But for various reasons, we would like to use mine because it works, aside from my own obvious reasons, for the speaker would prefer to use his own, but nonetheless, it has better properties with respect to its relation to theta correspondence and the various cycle class maps, et cetera, and connections with modular forms. It seems to be a little more singular at infinity, and so what's probably true is it's exactly the same problems that Jace is running into with intersection cohomology, or if you look in the original Herzberg's Augier papers, you'll discover that they work with the TMCs, where they subtracted certain combinations of the cusp divisors, and this gave rise to generating functions which have an additional term which has a min, lambda, lambda prime, some exotic theta-type functions, et cetera, all these are connected problems. And I believe that they'll be solved fairly soon because, in particular, Kuhn and Jens Funke, my former student, are working on correcting or figuring out how to make a correction to my Green's function, which would be the analog of the min, lambda, lambda prime in cohomology, which would then allow us to make a class here with the, basically what I would consider the right Green's function. Anyway, that's in some future part of version of this talk. Again, it's not my problem. So the special cycles, I've just defined them, and we can carry them over to the other slide, okay, and continue. Okay, so now I'm going to imagine, well, that this Green's function, for example, mine or the one in the other competing one, this should here is because we're not quite sure what happens at infinity. But when we make the compactification, and let's forget about that, if I had M was negative, this Green's function is given by a formula. And if M is negative, it actually still defines, that formula can be made sense of, and in fact defines a smooth function. The singularities that you have for a Green's function in this situation, actually when M is negative, here it's positive, when M is negative, those singularities disappear and you actually get a smooth function. And so you could make a pair consisting of zero for the cycle and this smooth function for the second component. And such things are perfectly allowed in the Gillet-Soulet groups and likewise in these groups. And if this thing happened to be smooth at infinity, it would even be a class in this group. So I'm sloughing over something here and claiming that I can nonetheless define a class for negative M. Now, there's another feature which I haven't mentioned here, and that is there's this number V, which has been floating around, which nobody made noise about. And that is that there's a real parameter. These Green's functions both depend on, particularly mine does, depends on some real parameter, positive real parameter, which is very interesting in the sense that we're now going to make some sort of a generating function for these classes. We now have them for all M except zero. And so we could make a generating function, just a formal power series with these things as coefficients. So this will be some formal power series valued with coefficients in this Chow group. And here the V is should be linked with the imaginary part of tau in here. So that's the magic that's going on. There's a parameter in the Chow group, but it's also linked with the parameter, the imaginary part in this generating function. It just turns out that's what you have to do. Okay. In any case, if you do that, you can make this generating function, which is now, okay, it's not a holomorphic function of tau, because tau is in the upper half plane, u plus iv. I wrote it somewhere. Here it is. And this v is the same v. And so this is not a holomorphic thing with respect to tau. Nonetheless, I'm claiming it's a modular form of weight 2 level d, the discriminant, and some Nabin type valued in the Chow group. Now, this claim should be understood in the sense that if I take linear functionals applied to the Chow group, each any linear functional applied to the Chow group, this thing should give rise to a classical non-holomorphic modular form. Now, that's real analytic, et cetera, et cetera. Okay. So that's the idea. And the basis for this speculation is that in the case of Shimura curves, you can do exactly the same construction. And in that case, this is exactly what Rappaport and Yang and I proved in the book. It's one of the main theorems of the book, that in fact these generating functions are modular forms, in that case of weight 3 halves. Yes? Integers. All integers. Z. And of course, what I didn't mention here very strongly is the fact that I am including here a class for M equals 0, whose definition is also problematic in this business. You have to be careful. It has to do with the Hodge bundle. So after all, these are substantially classes in pick hat, and so in particular on these varieties, there's a natural Hodge line bundle in this case, and the bundle of modular forms, which has a natural metric, And some version of that metrized bundle should be occurring in the constant term here, which is the analog of these invariant forms, the omegas. In any case, this is this first speculation. Now, this speculation was not made in this paper of I'm reporting on. They don't speculate anywhere near. Well, they're careful. They're writing a paper, but I'm not. So, in any case, one way of testing the speculation is, as I just explained, to apply linear functionals and check and see whether or not you have get modular forms by doing that. But in particular, what you could do to define such linear functionals is you could consider classes in eight in Chow hat 2. Now, the Chow groups form a ring. The Gillet-Soule Chow groups form a ring. And so with a height pairing as the analog of a cup product on cohomology. And so what you can do is you can take a cup product pairing or a height pairing between Chow hat 1 and Chow hat 2. You get something in Chow hat 3, and then there's a degree map on the top Chow group. And so you get a numerical pairing. So you can pair an element of Chow hat 2 with your given generating function, and you get a linear functional on Chow hat 1. So you could apply this linear functional to this generating series and see whether or not you get a modular form. Now, in the case of the other, I'll call it the other Green's function, this was done in for the specific class where you take the metrized Hodge bundle, you take its square lying in here, and you pair it with this generating series with their other Green's function. And what they showed is indeed you get a modular form. In fact, you get just a number times the usual Eisenstein series of weight 2 that Herzog-Birkin-Zaghier already found. So that's a known theorem in that case, but I think it's the wrong, it still hasn't been done in the other case because we don't have this theory for the other case. The metric isn't good. In any case, oops, I guess I have to go back, sorry. I knew I would start forgetting. Okay. So there's another possibility, and that is that if I have an arithmetic curve mapped into my scheme, so remember this guy is a three-dimensional scheme. If this is a one-dimensional scheme, which corresponds to points on the generic fiber, so these would be arithmetic curves, like spec of the ring of integers of a number field mapped in, then I, of course, can pull back. There's a pullback map on Chow group, so there's a pullback from Chow 1 to here to Chow 1 there, but this is now the top degree, and so we could apply the degree map, and we get a linear functional. So we get a linear functional, which is just the degree hat of J star for any such curve. And so we could also try to apply such a linear functional to our generating function in the style that I mentioned here. And that's basically what's being done in this paper of Howard and Yang, although they never mention this point of view at all because they're being very careful and not speculating. And you see all of this required some speculations. In particular, I have not, because of this Green's function issue, carefully defined an element of this Chow group here. I mean, we don't actually have this generating function carefully defined, so that's why they're careful. But I'm not being careful. And so we now can consider these particular type of linear functionals. So when we start to do that, we have to, well, there's a big supply of such arithmetic curves. I should have mentioned that. Well, you need a bunch of arithmetic curves, but they come from the theory of CM points. And so we're now going to consider the case where E is a quartic CM field over this this real quadratic field. So it has F as its real subfield. And so there will be three cases, the case in which I just have a biquadratic field. All of these, I think, have more or less occurred in these talks so far. There's the case of a biquadratic field, the case of a cyclic, where it's a cyclic non-biquadratic, therefore, and the case of, a non-Galois, where you get a dihedral group, a D8 as the Galois group of the Galois closure. And in any case, if I take a CM type of such a guy, so a pair of embeddings whose restrictions to F are related by sigma in this way, so I get the two different restrictions when I restrict them to F. The identity map, F is viewed as a subfield of C, and the sigma. This is a CM type. So for each CM type, and of course there are four of them, because there are two choices of an extension of the identity map to E and two choices of the extension of sigma to E, so there are two times two, there are four possible CM types. For each CM type, I define a trace and a reflex field, which is the subfield of complex numbers generated by the trace. And that reflex field has a ring of integers, which I call O sigma. And now what we would like to do is to consider, I'm trying to build the arithmetic curves that are going to map in here. So what we do is we consider the moduli stack again, over this time over spec of the ring of integers of this reflex field. of CM abelian schemes of type OE. In other words, what that means is that over a base S, I get a triple where S is an abelian scheme, OE is acting on it, we're given an action of OE, we're given a principal polarization, and now the condition on Rosati is that it should induce the complex conjugation on this field, which is a uniquely determined automorphism since it's a CM field. And there's a sigma-Kottwitz condition, which says that if I take, again, the characteristic polynomial of this action on the Lie algebra, it coincides with this polynomial, which is given by sigma. So remember, sigma over here is this pair, pi 1, pi 2 of embeddings of E, and so that gives us a polynomial with coefficients in F, and I require that, or rather, with coefficients in O in the reflex field. This is this polynomial here will have coefficients in this field, or in this ring, actually, and this ring, so I'm taking a scheme over O sigma, and therefore OS has a mapping of O sigma into it. The structure ring has the structure sheaf has O sigma sitting inside, and so this polynomial with O sigma coefficients can be viewed as a polynomial there, and I require that that be this characteristic polynomial. That's the sigma-Kottwitz condition. Okay, so when you do that, and this is what, when Howard and Yang do that, they get some kind of a stack over spec OE, and they prove that it's atoll and proper. And so this really is an arithmetic curve. It's the spec of the ring of integers of some number field, but what's true is that it may not be connected. This maybe have many copies because the class, instead of, unlike the case of CM elliptic curves where you just have the class group acting simply transitively on the CM points, this is much, can be much more complicated here. In any case, this may not be connected, but it's a nice arithmetic curve, and there is then a forgetful morphism from this curve into the moduli stack that base change to spec OE that we were just discussing. Namely, just take the OE action, which you have over here, and you restrict it to OF. And everything else is the same. The Kottwitz condition is, these Kottwitz conditions are all compatible because when I restrict to OF, bar is trivial, and pi 1 is the identity, and pi 2 is sigma, so we get the old Kottwitz condition. So Kottwitz condition restricts to Kottwitz condition, and so you simply get a morphism of functors. And so you get a map, a forgetful morphism from this arithmetic scheme to the scheme M. So that's the curve we're going to, or Howard and Yang use. And so now the problem is to try to identify the pullback of this generating function. So this is not what they proposed, but they are going to do this. And of course, this is some kind of an analog of a height pairing. It's anyway. Okay, so that's the problem, to identify what this generating function becomes under this particular linear functional. So in order to do that, it turns out that there's another generating function that comes into play. And before we do that, we should explain a very pretty little piece of algebra that Howard and Yang developed in this paper for this in this situation. So I'm going to from now on talk about exclude the biquadratic case. The biquadratic case is more complicated, easier and more complicated. So we're going to exclude it and only consider these cases. And what's true in these non-biquadratic cases is this reflex field, will always be also a quartic CM field. Okay, but let's describe how it goes. So what happens is that we let R be this algebra that you get by tensoring E with itself over F, but using the identity map and the Galois automorphism. Okay, so F has a Galois automorphism, so you can precompose with the Galois automorphism before you stick F into E, and you get this algebra here where F is sort of this twisted algebra. It has two automorphisms. One is you just put this complex conjugation and switch, and the other is that you switch the arguments without putting a bar. And then you can look at fixed algebras. So you can look at the algebra E sharp, which is just the invariance under switching, the symmetric elements, and F sharp, which is symmetric things fixed under rho squared. Now rho squared is just bar on both arguments. And it turns out that E sharp is again a CM field and F is a real subfield. This works also in the biquadratic case, but what's true in the cases I'm considering is that E sharp is always degree 4 and F sharp is always therefore degree 2. In the cyclic case, they coincide with the original E and F actually, and in the other case, they're another pair inside of that dihedral extension. Okay. In any case, the complex conjugation on this E sharp is rho squared, which I'll denote by dagger just because there's a bar that you already have acting on here I want to distinguish between, or they want to distinguish between the two. So now, it turns out that the CM types of the original field give rise exactly to the four complex embeddings of this field, okay, by just taking a pair to pi 1 of A, pi 2 of B. This is well defined because of the sigma condition relating these two guys, and this is, of course, on this whole algebra here, but it's actually restricted now to this, and this gives you a map from E sharp to E sigma for each sigma. I forgot something. Okay, so now we want to compute the pullback. This was the problem. Now we're trying to compute the pullback under this forgetful morphism of our generating function. So in particular, we're going to want to compute the pullback of one of our cycles. So here's the morphism. We're trying to pull back this cycle. So you form the fiber product. That's what pullback means. After all, in some sense, these cycles are defined as stacks over. And you can, if you want to view them as physical internal cycles, you have to take the images or something. But it's nicer actually to think in terms of these stacks over the given variety. So what we need to consider is this fiber product of these two things. So what will those be? So a point of such a thing will be, on the one hand, it's an abelian variety with a triple like this, a CM abelian variety on the one hand. On the other hand, it's an element J with J squared equals M because it's also coming here. Okay, so that's what you're supposed to get. And so in the case where E is not biquadratic and A is a complex point, it turns out that if you have an A already coming this way, in other words, your A is in this guy, it can't be in here because there are no special endomorphisms of such a guy. The answer is zero. And what that means is that this fiber product has no points in characteristic zero. It has empty generic fiber. Okay? So notice that this is an argument for using these modular definitions of all these cycles. If you took flat extensions, you would have trouble accounting for what's going on here because it has no generic fiber. So it's really the wrong thing to do to take closures, since you would never be able to do this very simple hierarchical, here I'm just doing both. I can do it. If I try to take flat closures, good luck, because in particular there's nothing in the generic fiber here. That's what I've just shown in the non-biquadratic case. So the generic fiber of this thing is empty, and it turns out, well, you can say a little more. What's true now is that, remember, we're in the situation where we have both CM and we're considering special endomorphisms, and it turns out that the OE action on A gives rise to a certain structure on this space of special endomorphisms, which is part of the beautiful observations of Howard and Yang. Save this for a moment. So remember, the reflex algebra was the symmetric element, so that's certainly spanned by these guys, which are clearly symmetric. And so what's true is that these guys, an element of this form, for example, acts on the space of special endomorphisms in the following way. Now, a special endomorphism is an endomorphism of A, and so are iota E of A and B, and so on, because OE is acting on A. So we can precompose with the bar of B, J, then A, and then do it in the other order, since it's this kind of a symmetric element. And it turns out that that is once again a symmetric, a special endomorphism. Now, of course, that means that the star has to be fixed and it has to anti-commute with the Galois, with the given real quadratic field, et cetera, et cetera. In any case, this is true. And you can check this. It's not completely obvious. And the second important point is, now remember that the space of special endomorphisms had a quadratic form on it, which is what we're using over here. And what's true is that this action has the complex conjugation as its adjoint with respect to that quadratic form. Okay, that's the second thing that they check. These are not obvious from the formulas. They're not hard, but they're, you know, serious, a bit of algebraic manipulation to prove these facts. Once you have these facts, what you get as a corollary is that this space, this vector space, the V here, where I've tensored with Q, the V with its quadratic form is actually gotten by tracing. Now, of course, you could make a Hermitian form over E, a one-dimensional Hermitian space over E, and take the trace, or some dimensional Hermitian space over E, or you could take a quadratic space over F and take its trace. Okay, so this quadratic form, this pair we started with the V and the quadratic form, can actually be gotten from an F-sharp quadratic space of dimension 2, it will turn out, in the cases of interest, which is the same space, but now with this F-sharp action induced by this action, and a quadratic form induced by this adjoint property. Okay, so So in fact, the space of, in other words, in this CM case that we're interested in over here, this lattice is actually a lattice in a quadratic space over F sharp. So not only can we talk about Q of J, but we can talk about Q sharp of J, which is now an element of F sharp. So that means you can now refine these cycles. This space, by the way, is always positive definite, of course. And now what you can do is you can refine the cycles. Namely, here we're considering points where we have both things going on. We have both CM and the special endomorphism. But the special endomorphisms where the length is M can now be decomposed over decomposed into the ones where the length of the J is actually the Q sharp value quadratic form takes value alpha. So you sum over all alpha whose trace is M. They have to be totally positive because the quadratic form here is totally positive. And but you can decompose this whole cycle according to the values of this quadratic form. Okay? So the M is fixed, but the, now we look at all elements of that trace and we can decompose the cycle in that way. So we get these subcycles. So these are now nice functors. And so you get this nice decomposition of the fiber product. Okay? Okay. Now, what Howard and Yang show is that in this non-biquadratic case, that these cycles here are either empty or zero-dimensional, okay, as schemes. Of course, this is some moduli stack, et cetera, et cetera. So it has dimension zero. There's no generic fiber, as I already mentioned. And again, there's a forgetful morphism, except now when you forget the, what are you forgetting? Here you're forgetting this distinction between of the various alphas. You're saying, well, whatever it is, just forget the J. Okay, so here I had, after all, an element of this fiber product is a triple like this. Now we forget the J and we just get an element of this space. So we're looking at this forgetful morphism in this way. Okay, so you get a forgetful morphism from these guys to this arithmetic curve. And so we have now zero cycles on an arithmetic curve, really as absolute schemes. I mean, there's an arithmetic curve and there's just some zero cycle on it. And so one would be, as I said here, a zero cycle, you get a, what I call a special zero cycle on this arithmetic curve. And of course, if you have the same habit I do from years ago, it's a bad habit maybe, but whatever, I would immediately be tempted to make a generating function out of these things. Now, before I do that, of course, nowadays I like to have an extra V in there just to make things more non-holomorphic and complicated. So what, here's the fact now. I'm now going beyond what's on the previous slide. Here I have a zero cycle on here. Okay. What I would like to claim is that I can now make, or Howard and Yang can now make, for each alpha in F star, they can make a class in the arithmetic Chow group of this arithmetic curve. Okay. Now V is a pair of positive real numbers, and in the first Chow group. Now, let me remind you very briefly, well, let me just say what it is first. So if alpha is totally positive, it's just the class of this guy that I had. Okay. That's a zero cycle. And if alpha is not totally positive, so if alpha is and it's an invertible element, so if it has some signature, then there's going to be some Archimedean class. Now, what do we mean by an Archimedean class? Now, an arithmetic curve is basically the spec of the ring of integers of a number field. An R-Kalov divisor on such a thing, if you look back at the very old thing, it's just the usual divisor, so it's a fractional ideal, if you like, together with a number at each Archimedean place, satisfying some, maybe you wanted, if your thing has a complex conjugation, you want it to be invariant, whatever. But anyway, it's just a number at each complex place. And so what's true now is in the case where alpha is not positive definite, what I have to do here is simply assign to each complex place of, to each complex point of this scheme here, I have to assign a number. And that's what they do, although this is something that's not in their paper, and I realize that they should have done in the paper while giving this talk. For some reason, they don't consider this class, but only the sum on alpha. I have to talk to them about this. Okay. In any case, if you define these classes in this way, you can define a generating function, as I've been threatening. And now the sum is over all alpha in this F sharp, and Q to the alpha, as usual, means the exponential for a real quadratic field. And we take the degree hat of these classes. Now, that is just going to be, well, okay, so we get this generating function. And then finally, in this function, I notice there's no star here. I'm adding a class for zero. So for zero, these are, by the way, numbers now. Okay, so this is just the usual complex series. And so I have to add a number. It's zero. Okay. I haven't told you what it is yet, and I'll tell you in just a second what it has to be. Okay. So so that's our new generating function. And so now here's a vague conjecture, or a conjecture. Maybe this. Sorry, it's a vague version. It's a precise conjecture, and you'll see why it's a precise conjecture in just a moment. This generating function is a Hilbert modular form of weight 1 and some level for SL2 of the ring of integers of OF sharp. Okay? Well, this form is correct. Okay? And again, this is not stated in Howard and Yang, but they prove it, essentially, in many cases. Okay? Modulo the fact that they didn't define these classes, although they're implicit in what they're doing, and if you read their formulas carefully, you see that they are, in fact, showing this conjecture is true. And so in order to explain what the answer is and why they really do prove it, I have to introduce the incoherent Eisenstein series. What's my end time? I've forgotten. An hour ago? 12:20. Okay, good. Okay, so anyway, in order to explain this, as I said, is a vague version. Now, what the conjecture, there's a sharp version, which I'm going to state in just a moment, which says which modular form it's supposed to be. Okay? And so this is why I'm saying conjecture instead of speculation here. Okay, so in order to explain this, I first have to tell you, provide you at least with a few modular forms that it could be. And so I have to talk about the Eisenstein series, and in particular the incoherent ones. Oops, I forgot to move this. Okay. Yeah. Yes, yes. Exactly. So just brute force. It's the Gros-Saguier method. Okay. Okay. Which is why these slides look so nice and clean and so on, why the paper of Howard and Yang is 117 pages of very hard, dense calculations. Okay. Anyway, so if I have an object, a complex point of this moduli scheme, so this is just an abelian variety, abelian surface, in fact, with CM by this quartic field, just a CM quartic CM abelian surface. I can look at a corresponding object M of A, where M is just the homology of A, the integral homology. This integral homology has rank 4. It's an abelian surface. It's a complex abelian surface. And it has an OE action. So it's just a module over OE. And therefore, it's would like to be a fractional ideal because E has degree 4 over Q, which is the dimension of this. It has on it a Riemann form, because it's the homology of a principally polarized abelian variety. And, of course, it also has a lattice of special endomorphisms. Now, here, I'm saying of M. What I mean by that is that I forget the fact that, of course, if you want to give an abelian variety out of the data up here, these first three things, you now have to specify a complex structure on the real points here, on MR. And once you do that, compatible with the OE action, you will get yourself, and with the polarization, such that the complex structure makes this truly a Riemann form, you will get an abelian variety. As you recover the abelian variety from this. But here I'm taking a lattice of special endomorphisms of M, so what that means is I have an endomorphism of this lattice here, which has the same underlying, there's an OF acting. It's special, and there's a star. It has all the properties that J had, except it's just an endomorphism of M. And now an endomorphism of this doesn't have to correspond to a holomorphic map of the complex torus. It'll just correspond to a real analytic map. Okay? So this is nonetheless, I can talk about the lattice of special endomorphisms, and this lattice will have, in fact, rank 4 in this case, period. It just has rank 4. Okay? Because these endomorphisms do not, in general, give endomorphisms of A. In fact, because of some slide ago, there are no special endomorphisms of A, so none of these guys actually commute with the complex structure and define actual special endomorphisms of A. Nonetheless, I can consider this lattice for each point in this, each complex point. And once again, by the general pretty algebra construction which I described to you before, the E sharp acts on this. Because OE acts here, E sharp acts here, okay, on the special endomorphisms for the same calculation. And so what you get is that you get a quadratic space over F sharp, which has dimension 2. because this space always has dimension 4. Okay? So you get a binary quadratic space over F sharp. With a quadratic form, because the facts that I've reviewed before are still true, namely you can still write this quadratic form as a trace of a quadratic form on F sharp for exactly the same reasons. It's the same calculation. Okay. Now what's true, however, is that this quadratic form is not positive definite because it's not coming from algebraic geometry. These are just real analytic endomorphism. And it has signature 0, 2, 2, 0, where the places are determined by the type. So this E sigma gives me a place of F sharp, because it gives me a holomorphic, an embedding. Sigma gives me an embedding of E sharp, that's what I described before. It therefore gives me an embedding of F sharp, and at that place the signature is 0, 2. And at the other one it's 2, 0. Okay, so this is the kind of quadratic space that pops out of this situation for each complex point here. Okay. So now, attached to such a thing, I can make an Eisenstein series, because I have a binary quadratic form. I can make an Eisenstein, a Hilbert modular Eisenstein series, Ziegle-Vey type thing, out of this guy. I have a lattice, a quadratic form, et cetera, et cetera, where the weight is minus 1, 1, because the signature is 0, 2, 2. All right? So I get an Eisenstein series attached to this. This Eisenstein series, well, this is a Ziegle-Vey Eisenstein series. If I look at the value at S equals 0, which is the center of the critical strip, I'll just get the binary theta series attached to this guy, suitably defined. Well, of course, the coefficients, the Fourier coefficients will be mixed, because there's the signatures of the Fourier coefficients will be the same as the numbers represented by this form, which have this signature. They're negative at the first place and positive at the second place. So you can calculate the value of this Eisenstein series at 0 by just calculating this binary. This is a definite form, so you can really see what this, calculate this series if you wanted. Okay, but now I can make it incoherent by switching this weight here to a plus 1. I move up by 2. Okay? And Eisenstein series are built out of local data. They don't care about the global quadratic space. They just care prime by prime what local data you put in. So I'm perfectly welcome to switch the weight here, because the induced representation containing this vector involved is the same. I can switch the weight at that one place and make a thing of parallel weight 1, which I'm writing as a bold 1, although I'm not sure you can see it. And now all that's left of L, the signature of L, has been thrown away, and it's just the finite part of L that's left. So associated with the finite part of L in this parallel weight 1, there is an incoherent Eisenstein series. Now this guy, the Siegel formula now, gives that for the original one, I get a binary theta series for the quadratic space here, whereas for the other one, because of incoherence, it's 0 at the center at S equals 0. Okay? So this is an incoherent series. It has this property that it automatically zero vanishes at the center. Okay, and now what we can do is to speculate. So what you can do is you sum these series over all the isomorphism classes of objects here. There's one for each object. And then you get an incoherent series. The value of this at the center is still 0. And you can compute its derivative. You can calculate this. It's a mess. But nonetheless, it has some Fourier expansion over all things here, where this is not holomorphic, and the derivative is not holomorphic, so the imaginary part is indeed sitting in the coefficients. And here's the precise version of the first conjecture, namely that this derivative of the center of this incoherent Eisenstein series is up to minus sign and the number of roots of unity equal to this generating function that I wrote down before. Okay. Now, the reason I can, this is again not stated in the paper of Howard and Yang, but they proved it. If you look in their paper, you find that under hypothesis B, then this conjecture, which we've somehow got to A here, sorry, conjecture 1, this conjecture is true. Okay? So under a certain hypothesis called hypothesis B, this conjecture is true. So it's a theorem in many, many cases that you actually have this. And now, okay, so what does this amount to? This identity, which you will also not find in the paper of Howard and Yang, amounts to a bunch of identifications of these Fourier coefficients with the degrees of these things. Now, these things here, when alpha is positive definite, do occur in the paper of Howard and Yang. As I explained earlier, their degree hat doesn't have a V in it. It can throw away this Q. And they indeed show that the derivative is equal to this. They also showed that if you sum on alpha of trace M, that the corresponding parts for alpha, where if it's not positive, has some signature, they show that identity too. But in fact, if you look, they've shown the same thing here for other alpha. What they haven't, what's true now is that, you remember back when I made this generating series that we're talking about here, namely this one, I hadn't really told you what the constant term was. Okay? So here you see, for alpha not zero, Howard and Yang have proved the result. What about alpha equals zero? Well, I didn't define the constant term here, so it's pretty clear what I should take for the constant term of this numerical series. I better take the derivative, the constant term of that guy. That certainly is the constant term of this generating function, and it leaves open the question as to why you would take that particular value. In other words, you need a geometric justification of taking that particular value at zero. Let me go on and talk about that later. Let me say what hypothesis B is here, which proves conjecture one in many cases. It's very simple, actually. Remember, we have this CM field. We can look at all the embeddings into the algebraic closure of Q, and we can take the images. You get a bunch of algebraic numbers, and you can take the field over QP that they generate, call that EP, inside of the algebraic closure, say, of QP. And the hypothesis B is simply that that field has degree less than or equal to 4 for all primes P. In the cyclic case, this is automatic. So that's one case in which part one of this thing is completely fine in general. For the dihedral case, you have to be careful. And there might be some primes where it won't work, in which case you won't know that this theorem completely, although you know most of these. And then finally, the second part is familiar. The ramification indices are less than P minus 1, which looks very familiar to all those who know about divided powers and all this kind of garbage and deformation theory, and that's why it's here. And again, if you require, for example, that this thing is cyclic and unramified at 2 and 3, where the degree here is actually 4, so the ramification index could be at most 4, right? I mean, if this is a cyclic extension, then this field can have a degree at most 4, because all embeddings just give you elements of E, and I'm just looking at the completion of E here, right? And so it has degree at most 4. And so in that case, if P is 5, it's already okay. So as long as it's unramified at 2 and 3, then all the hypotheses are satisfied and the conjecture is true. Okay? So there's a big infinite case, the cyclic cases. The biquadratic cases, it's not my paper. I didn't check. They didn't write it down. They didn't write these conjectures. There's lots of things I didn't check in the case of this talk, since I'm saying things that some of which are proved in their paper but not stated. So it was a lot of mining that I had to do. In any case, the constant term. So obviously, as I just explained, this is the right value for the constant term on the generating series side, obviously. And the question is, why? What is the geometric meaning of that? And what this should involve is the Faulting's height of these abelian varieties. And I would guess that what comes out is that if you look at the calculate this, which unfortunately they didn't register in their paper, although Tong Hai knows perfectly well how to calculate it, and it's probably in some other papers, I didn't look for it, you'll find a formula which is no doubt the Faulting's height of the abelian variety A that we were starting with. So up to some modification involving this imaginary part, some logs and so on. Okay. So that's what's proved in this paper. Okay. Now we're going to return to our original generating series, which is also not stated in the paper, which is also not known to be quite valued in here, but I'm going to pretend it is. So now I have this original generating series, and we could now ask, what is the pullback of this guy along these things? Now, you remember these generating series that I've been discussing with these conjectures and hypotheses, et cetera, back here, are gotten when I took that fiber product and I saw the pieces that I was supposed to see. In other words, there's this cycle here. If I have the TMs and I look at the intersections of the two, I get these pieces on here, which are the coefficients of this generating function we've been just discussing, the generating function on this scheme. Okay? And so there should be some relation. And so that's the next conjecture. Conjecture two is that if you take the pullback of this sort of generating function here, which is supposed to have weight 2 for SL2Z, along this morphism and take degree hat, I claim that you get the restriction to Q of this Hilbert modular form. Now you see this guy had weight 1 on F sharp, and so when I pull it back under the diagonal map to Q, I will get weight 2. And also I didn't check all the things about Nabentheim's characters and so on and so forth, but I'm sure they're all fine here. This is just too good to be true, to be false. It's too good to be false here. So this is conjecture 2. And so this can be viewed as a bunch of formulas for height pairings or intersection numbers. So really, when I pull back this guy, I'm really looking at the pullback of these cycles or the push forward of this cycle and then intersecting on the finite part. So this TM, which is the arithmetic Hertzeberg-Zagier cycle, here's an arithmetic curve sitting on the Hilbert modular surface. You can imagine geometrically that they're going to intersect on this three. It's not a surface anymore, it's a threefold. So now I have a surface in that threefold, a curve in that threefold, a threefold, and I'm expecting that, and they don't meet in the generic fiber, so I should get some intersections going on in the finite part. And in fact, in this non-biquadratic case, the theorem that a result of Howard and Yang that I mentioned earlier showed that these pieces, which were the little pieces of that fiber product, are zero-dimensional. So the intersections really are proper. There's no degenerate intersections going on here. That's the import of that thing that I mentioned earlier. And so this, you can calculate this intersection, and what's true is that to show this identity is to simply show that this thing is the degree hats of these little pieces. Right? That's exactly summed over all elements of trace M. Well, this is exactly what Howard and Yang prove. For all positive M, under hypothesis the hypothesis B, and there's an analogous statement for the Archimedean part, which is now a question of taking the Green's function for this guy and evaluating it on the CM cycle, and they also prove that. Because now it doesn't matter whether you take a modified at infinity, which version of the, they use my Green's function, so they aren't, that's why they're not doing these speculations, because they don't know they end up in this group. But if they use my Green's function and they compute the analogous contribution of the finite part, they again get the identity. So in some sense, they prove this conjecture. The only problem is, of course, that in this, in the non-biquadratic case, the only problem is there's a zero in here, and that now is a theorem, because you can't fudge it anymore. We've already fudged the constant term of this guy to match the Eisenstein series and make it modular. The constant term of this other guy, well, of course, you could fudge it, but you can't fudge it for all E simultaneously. It, after all, is a thing about M. It doesn't know anything about any specific abelian variety, so you better define the M, the thing that goes here, and moreover, you know what it has to be, some Hodge bundle, et cetera, et cetera. So in any case, the real theorem to be proved, and it might be a consequence of all the other identities and modularity, but you don't know modularity of this guy. That's the problem. If you knew this a priori, you would get some theorem. In any case, this, again, is proved under hypothesis B for all primes P as a theorem of Howard and Yang, this conjecture. So just to finish, I'll just make some final remarks. The first thing is that the constant terms have to, there are remaining issues. Okay, what's remaining here in order to actually have these various so-called theorems that I'm stating, which they've been careful and not stated. Instead, they have many, many complicated identities which amount to these theorems, if you believe them. The theorems, that is, the weird identities and the things that are missing here. Okay, so what's missing? Well, the constant terms, as we said, have to be handled correctly. Now, fudging up the generating function here, it's clear. I put that number in and it's modular. But of course, that's begging the question because I'd like to have a geometric interpretation of that number and not just say what it is. Okay. So this, as I said, will undoubtedly involve the Faltings heights of these CM abelian surfaces. And Tonghai Yang has this paper about that subject, and I would guess that if you looked at it carefully enough, you'll discover that the fudge term is indeed equal to the Faltings height that you're supposed to put geometrically. So I'm guessing that that's actually sitting in the literature. I didn't get around to it. The second thing is the Green's functions. So I've already discussed this to some extent. My Green's function has this exponential integral in it, but you have to modify it probably in order to get classes in here, and then that'll put all this on a firm footing, although it may involve some correction term somewhere. But I guess that it also, just from the look of these theorems or these results that they have partially proved here, that in the non-biquadratic case, there won't be any correction terms. These theorems will be fine on the nose with the modified Green's function. If you go to the biquadratic case, then probably what will happen is the reason that they haven't finished that case is that you will end up with some correction due to the interaction with the cusps. And so finally, I want to just remark that this identity here, this conjecture 2, is what I would view as a seesaw identity for arithmetic theta functions. Okay, so you see, on the one hand, so now seesaw dual pairs. If I have an orthogonal group, I could have some quadratic space Now remember that the, let's ignore the geometric side for a moment and talk about classical seesaws. If I'd made more careful slides, I would do that. If I have SL2Q, well, let's start with SL2F sharp. I have this binary quadratic space. So I have a dual pair SL2O2, where the O2 is from that W sharp space. So these guys are mutual commutants in some big symplectic group. Okay? Now, if I consider the commutant instead of this guy of this smaller group, where I take SL2Q, what will happen on the other side is where down on this side I have, as a commutant of that, I have this O2. I will get O of the trace of that quadratic form to Q, which is exactly this space V. So the dual pair, the seesaw pair here is SL2 O of W sharp, SL2 F sharp, O of W sharp, and SL2Q O of V, and with Q. That's the seesaw. Now, if I replace these O of V and O of W sharp with the corresponding moduli spaces, which they're sort of vaguely associated to, then I'll get the Hilbert modular variety and these CM guys. And so now, if you think about it, the arithmetic theta function, say for the one that where we do know the theorem in the conjecture in almost all cases, in many, many cases, this is the case where it's just the constant term and so on. In this case here, what we showed is we had a generating function for the zero cycles on the arithmetic curve, and it was the derivative of that incoherent Eisenstein series of weight 1 on the Hilbert modular group. That's another, not part of this conjecture, but it's an identification of this side. So that's a modular form here with values here. If I restrict that modular form, I will get a modular form here with values here. Okay? On the other hand, there's another way of doing such a thing. I could take this modular form, which is now a modular form we conjecture, and which haven't proved at all, which would be, if our dreams come true, this would be an elliptic modular form with values in the Chow groups of this guy. Now, I can also get a elliptic modular form with values in the Chow hat 1 of this guy by pulling that one back. And the seesaw identity says that those two operations give the same result. That's this identity. Okay. Now, why is that nice? Well, that's nice because you can use it in Rank and Selberg type integrals to relate this whole business to central derivatives of L functions and Gross Zagier style formulas. Whoops, forgot this one. And so let me just sketch how that would be done. So using this dual pair here, this arithmetic, think of this as an arithmetic theta function, and we're granting conjecture 1, which is to say that this is a modular form. Then if we had any cusp form of weight 2 on gamma 0d and character chi, so now something on here, we could integrate against this guy, which has the same type. We could take the Peterson inner product of f with this arithmetic theta function. Now what's true is that the f will now get some averaged value of this guy, so we'll get a class in Chow hat 1 in this group here, right? Because this theta function is valued there. So you can think of this as an arithmetic theta lift, so it's not lifting something to modular forms, it's lifting to elements of a Chow group. So you would then get this arithmetic theta lift from cusp forms here to this arithmetic Chow group. This is the analog of the Herzebruch-Zagier kind of thing that Jace mentioned, where you would get some lift from this kind of a space to homology. This is the analog. Okay. And now, so you have these classes. Now, so I'm getting these classes in this group, and I would like to look at their pullbacks onto these various curves and apply degree hat. So what happens to those guys? What are those guys then supposed to be equal to? Well, if all the conjectures are true, you could do the following calculation. So I have this class here, which I get by this arithmetic theta lift. I pull it back and take degree hat. So what is that? Well, that's this. Now, what I can also do is I can first, before I integrate against F, I just pull this guy back. Then I get the derivative of the incoherent Eisenstein series. So I put this derivative inside. Of course, it has to be pulled back according to the diagonal by the seesaw identity, which I now lost. And so you'll get the derivative at S equals 0 of this by the seesaw identity. Now, if you look at this integral without the derivative, you should get some L function. And now we're seeing its central derivative. Now, the L function is attached to an elliptic modular form here, and this extension, this quartic CM field over F, and the CM type that's been chosen, although the Hilbert modular form is non-F sharp, and so on and so forth. Okay, So that gives, that means that these classes that you produce by this arithmetic theta lift like this, if you look at their pullbacks along these various cycles like that, you get all these derivatives as you vary the E and the F and so on. So this wonderful class here is somehow a geometric incarnation of all these guys. This is sort of in Kato's L element style, right? The zeta element, right? So there's an element here in this Chow group such that when you pull back along these guys, you get these, well, some constants to calculate here. So anyway, the one thing, I didn't check what Rankin-Selberg integral this is, by the way. So I think that's the end.